Welcome back into the Pick and Roll NBA podcast with Jet and Sap, presented as always by Full Press Coverage. Since we last talked, the Kevin Durant situation has been apparently resolved. Sap, we were speculating last week, when's this going to come to an end? Is he going to get traded? Who's he going to get traded to? Could he hold out? Well, apparently all sides came together and said, let's just all start the season together. And I believe they called it in an Instagram post, renewing their partnership or resuming their partnership. So Kevin Durant is set to start the season with the Nets, and they now the Nets are sort of in damage control mode, saying, well, everything's fine, you know, we're going to be great, this is going to work out really well. And they want this trade request to be sort of swept under the rug as much as possible now. But the question is going to be, Sap, what's going to be the chemistry on that team? Is there going to be, you know, leftover bad feelings? Is this going to affect the season? There's a lot of questions still about the Nets, but at least one has been answered. Kevin Durant will indeed start the season as a Net. Who knows what happens from there?
All I could think of is the scene in Goodfellas when Paulie brings in Jimmy Conway and then they bring in Henry Hill and they tell him that he has to get along with his wife, Karen, and everything is going to be beautiful, right? And that's kind of what this meeting must have been like with Josai, his wife, bringing in Sean Marks, the general manager, Steve Nash, the head coach, Kevin Durant, and his representative, and just said, look, we're not going to trade you. And, oh, by the way, we're not going to get rid of our general manager and coach, so let's make this work. And Kevin Durant was on board with it. And, look, I think this is a monumental occurrence in the league. I don't want to be hyperbolic here, but this is big because, for the most part, players get what they want. If they want to get traded, they get traded. We saw James Harden eat his way out of Houston, and then after a year and a half decided he wanted to leave Brooklyn, and he was accommodated both times. Ben Simmons didn't want to play in Philadelphia anymore. He ends up in Brooklyn. This is the way it works in the league. Well, this is one time where ownership said enough, and I think that is huge because in 2 years, we've got the collective bargaining agreement that comes up, and then in 3 years, the new TV contract kicks in. And yeah, we've talked about that TV contract. That is enormous. It's 10 years, $75 billion. Think about how much that is for every team. $250 million a year for 10 years. I mean, the salary cap is going to go through the roof. Players are going to be making 50% more than they make now, if not more than that. So why ruin a good thing? As Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban often says, pigs get fed, hogs get slaughtered. Let's not be gluttonous here. So I think it's a good thing for the league. And as we both agree, 99% of the time, I favor the players. In this case, I think it was good that the ownership pushed back here and said, no, we're not going to trade you. We're not going to fire the general manager and coach. And if I'm Josai, you could look at Kevin Durant and say, look, I've committed $320 million to you, and you've played 90 games, and we made it to the second round once and the first round the following year. Like, I need something back on my investment as well. So I think it works out good for Brooklyn that he's going to be coming back. The X factor on that team, obviously, is Ben Simmons, how much he can contribute. And also, oh, by the way, nothing was really said about Kyrie Irving, who opted in for 1 year with Brooklyn, and we kept hearing about that he might get traded to the Lakers. I'm under the assumption that he's going to play in Brooklyn this year and they're going to run it back and take a shot at it with Durant, Kyrie, and Ben Simmons and see where everything falls.
Yeah, I think that's fully their intention, and that's the best thing for Brooklyn. We know what the return was going to be in a Kyrie Irving trade. It was going to be Russell Westbrook and, you know, a couple of picks. They had no use for any of those things. Brooklyn has none of their own picks, so they want to be good. They have no incentive to lose games. And, you know, the potential of a Kyrie Irving, Ben Simmons, Kevin Durant pairing or trio, rather, I should say, is tantalizing talent-wise, you know, mentality-wise, headspace-wise. It's, you know, about the three most mercurial guys you could put together. So I don't know if that's a good fit. But for Brooklyn, you know, those you do have three all-stars, three star-level players, and that's something that most teams don't have. So it made all the sense in the world for them to not want to trade Kevin Durant and not want to trade Kyrie Irving for pennies on the dollar, and to, in fact, run it back. So in this battle of wills, Brooklyn got what they wanted, which was also happened to be the best thing for their team and their fan base, and so, and their owner, Josai. And so, obviously, they were playing this sort of game the entire time where they said, okay, Kevin, you know, yeah, we'll look for a trade for you, but, you know, it's going to have to be a high asking price, and they knew no one was going to meet exactly what they wanted. And so I think this was their intention all along. And so, yeah, it's a rare win for an organization over a player. Like you said, it's hard to root for billionaires over millionaires. But in this case, with Kevin Durant coming off of just signing a new deal, it did seem a little bit ridiculous that he was, you know, trying to be traded after, you know, having committed to the team a year ago for 4 years. So it's definitely a big win for Brooklyn. And whether Kevin Durant is mopey or plays like that, that remains to be seen. But today, Brooklyn is in much better shape than they were a couple days ago.
And this could be revisited next summer when Kevin Durant decides he wants to get traded and Kyrie Irving can go into free agency. And we don't know what the hell Ben Simmons is. And at that point, Josiah might say, you know what, I'm blowing up the organization. It's time for the general manager, the coach, and all these star players to go, and I'm going to reboot it. Who knows? That could happen next summer because, you know, these things do have a tendency of changing quickly. But to look at that big three, it should fit, right? Because you've got Durant and Kyrie Irving, when they're able to play together, which isn't all that often, they've been pretty darn good. Let's not forget, last January, midway through the season, Brooklyn was the number one seed. Durant was healthy, was a leading contender to be the league MVP, even though Kyrie had missed a lot of games because he wasn't vaccinated, and James Harden started to now implode and decide that he wanted out of Brooklyn. They still were the number one seed at that point. Durant gets hurt, and they really never recover from that. Now, if you have Durant playing 60-65 games, if Kyrie plays 60-65 games, and they mesh the way they should on the court, that's a really good start, because we're talking about two guys who are essentially 50-40-90 guys. I mean, these are two incredibly efficient players. This isn't Russell Westbrook shooting, you know, 39% from the floor and 29% from the three-point line. You know, these are very efficient players who I think play well together. And then you add in a third player in Ben Simmons, who should fit perfectly with them because he gives them what they don't have, which is rebounding, defense, facilitating. He kind of fills in all the gaps. And when those big threes work together, that's what happens. I mean, you know, I'll go back a couple of decades when the Bulls were dominant. The big three, the second time around in the three-peat, was Jordan, Pippen, and Rodman. Perfect. Jordan's the alpha. He's your leading scorer. Pippen does everything. Defends, rebounds, scores when he needs to, facilitates. And then you got Rodman playing defense and rebounding. So everybody had their role. They didn't step on each other. The big three in Miami, that was a bit wonky at the beginning. You remember, because I don't think LeBron and Dwayne Wade ever really meshed together. They're great friends off the court. On the court, it didn't always work. But Dwayne Wade was such a smart leader. He understood that I'm going to cede leadership to LeBron James because that's going to be better for the team. So give Dwayne Wade a lot of credit for that. His maturity was so important in that. And Chris Bosh never really expanded his game with Miami. It didn't necessarily work. But because LeBron was so great and Wade and Bosh were still really good players, they did win two championships in 4 years. Then you fast forward to what Golden State had when they had a big three, obviously, of Curry, Klay Thompson, and Durant, or if you want to say before and after, big three of Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green. It just worked because, you know, Curry and Durant are such efficient players. Klay's the perfect guy who doesn't need to be the alpha, and Draymond, kind of like Dennis Rodman, does all the dirty work. This big three in Brooklyn could work, but again, the guys have to play and have to buy in and have to be concentrating on basketball. If they're able to do that, then look out. This will be a contending team without question.
Yeah, well, what we said about Ben Simmons for years, Sap, when he was in Philadelphia, is that he can't be a primary scorer. He really can't be a secondary scorer. Well, perfect. On Brooklyn, he's not the primary scorer. He's not the secondary scorer. He's the third scorer. Heck, they have guys like Seth Curry, and now they signed T.J. Warren, and they have Joe Harris. So, you know, really, Ben Simmons doesn't have to do any scoring if he doesn't want to. So the shooting won't be a problem for him. I think it's a perfect situation for him in terms of playing into his skill set. The problem is in Brooklyn now is that you have one guy who is perennially unhappy in Kevin Durant, but he does love playing basketball. We know that. We have one guy who's flaky as hell in Kyrie Irving. We don't know how much he likes playing basketball. And Ben Simmons, who I think we have the assumption doesn't like playing basketball very much. So you got a weird personality mix there. That's the thing that could derail it. It's not the talent. I think everybody agrees the talent's there. I'm not the biggest Ben Simmons fan in the world, but I can acknowledge the talent. He's got a very unique skill set, one of the most unique in the NBA. But the mentality is the question, Sap. So, you know, that's what it's all going to come down to, is can Brooklyn figure out how to overcome those mental hurdles? So far, they haven't with this since Durant and Kyrie decided to sign there a few summers ago.
They just haven't played together. They haven't played together much, so we're going to have to see how that works. And now Ben Simmons, who didn't play at all last year, we'll see how he fits in. And, you know, the thing with Ben Simmons is he can fill in those gaps where they were weak last year. Let's just look back to the Celtics series in the first round. Celtics sweep Brooklyn, but they outscored them by 18 total points. So it almost sounds like a Yogi Berra statement. It was a fairly close sweep. 18 right. points in four games is only 4.5 points per game. And we know that if game one flips on one play, maybe Brooklyn wins that series. Who knows?
Possible, yeah.
Brooklyn played pretty efficiently offensively in that series. They shot over 40% from three-point territory. They were okay there. They were a disaster on the defensive end. How many times did we see in close games Jaylen Brown breaking down, say, Blake Griffin on three, four consecutive defensively. Possessions?
And lazy.
And lazy. Now you put Ben Simmons out there, you know, now Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum aren't going to be able to score as easily, again, if Simmons is engaged. So that's going to help them defensively. You add a player like Royce O'Neal, who's a nice piece. TJ Warren can give you points off the board. You've already got some other players in Seth Curry, Joe Harris, you know, who can score. And also you've got Patty Mills, who's won a championship. So, look, their roster is very, very strong. The East is very strong and deep. I put out my power rankings earlier today at John Sapp 25. I have the Celtics 1, Milwaukee 2, Philadelphia 3, Miami 4, and I've got Brooklyn 5, but those can all be kind of shaken up at some point throughout the season. You know, then after that, I do like Toronto because I think it's a well-run organization. I had them at number 6, and then after that, it was Cleveland and Chicago. And, you know, again, the East is very, very deep, and then we'll have to see what happens with the Knicks if they, in fact, get Donovan Mitchell from the Utah Jazz. But the East is very deep, so, you know, you have to get off to a good start, maintain that, and obviously try to avoid the play-in tournament so that you can get a little bit of rest heading into the playoffs and get a more favorable matchup than Brooklyn had last year where, you know, they had to go through the play-in and then face a really hot Celtics team. But, yeah, this is going to be fascinating to watch. But I think overall for the league it's good because the ownership pushed back, and I think the rest of the owners and general managers in the league were, like, giving a round of applause to Joe Tsai, who stood up, and maybe that will – make the owners more comfortable going into the new collective bargaining agreement, which has to be negotiated over the next 2 years, because I think this thing could all blow up if owners get a hair across their ass and say, we're tired of this. You know, we've got to put some protection for us. If we're going to commit to $320 million to a player and less than halfway through the deal, he's looking to get out of here. Like, we need protection too. And I think that this is a way that the ownership can maybe feel a little bit stronger, get that CBA done so that everybody makes a ton of money, and then that TV money kicks in and the league continues to grow. Again, you don't want to eat yourself alive, and that's what the NBA was kind of headed to if this deal worked out, that Durant forced the trade, got traded, and at that point, all hell could break loose with ownership throughout the league.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, all the owners of the other franchise, of the 29 other franchises, were paying attention really closely here. It was a bit of a unique circumstance in that Brooklyn – you know, for Brooklyn, and that they had leverage over Kevin Durant, that he has 4 years remaining on his contract, which is a lot of time. A lot of times in these deals, it's like 2 years remaining. So, you know, more leverage for Brooklyn based off of when Durant gave this trade request. And also Brooklyn was in the unique position of being a legitimate contender should they keep Durant. I think we, you know, again, we're not sure where they rank in the East. It could be higher, could be lower than what you had them, Sapp. But if those three are engaged and healthy, they are a legitimate championship contender. So it was a little bit of a unique circumstance in terms of, you know, superstar requesting trade, but certainly the other 29, you know, franchises were very happy with the result. Maybe the players weren't, but the owners were. And I think some players were happy that this thing finally got resolved. You saw Pat Beverly, Sapp, was tweeting out that basically this Kevin Durant trade request had an unfortunate ripple effect on a lot of players, in that especially players who are either still free agents or, you know, in the final year of their contract and looking to be traded, and that it essentially froze all transactions in the rest of the league while everybody was waiting to see what happened and, you know, which teams were going to be needed to facilitate a trade, which teams were going to go into tanking mode, which teams were going to go into, you know, trying to build up more for a championship. And so, you know, it had that ripple effect, and Patrick Beverly essentially said, you know, this Kevin Durant thing really held up a lot of NBA players' livelihoods. And now, you know, that it's resolved, they can kind of move on about business.
Yeah, paralyzed the league because even teams that weren't interested in trading for Kevin Durant, didn't have the pieces or weren't considered contending teams, could also be there as a third team to facilitate the trade, like you said. And I always would throw Danny Ainge, who now runs the Utah Jazz, who's always ready, willing, and able to be that third team to try to improve his lot, get some draft picks to facilitate a trade. He's done it many times. But now that Durant's staying in Brooklyn, and about 90% sure that Kyrie's going to stay in Brooklyn as well, maybe even 95% sure that he stays in Brooklyn, the league can move on. The other players that haven't signed can get those deals done, because we're only about 4 weeks away from training camp. We're less than 2 months away from the start of the season. So, you know, the starting line is not that far away.
Sap, as far as the Kyrie thing goes, I agree with you. I think he's going to stay in Brooklyn. And I think once he opted in, that was what Brooklyn's intention was to get Durant back in the fold and have this be their big three for the season: Simmons, Kyrie, and Kevin Durant. It also, I think, clearly signals that Brooklyn had no interest in that Lakers package of Russell Westbrook and picks, regardless of the Lakers were going to throw one or two picks in there. Taylen Horton-Tucker didn't make any sort of difference or move the needle. They still know Kyrie Irving is a more valuable player than Westbrook. And I think you're seeing throughout the league, no one wants to take on Russell Westbrook, because even though it's just 1 year, it's still a terrible contract. And they look at him as a net negative. So the Lakers, we thought they were going to have a hell of a time moving Russell Westbrook. It doesn't seem like they're going to find any takers for him without having to give up way more than they're willing to give up.
Yeah, it's going to have to be two first round picks. It's going to have to be one of their young players. They don't have many of those at all to get rid of Russell Westbrook for 1 year. Now, the only reason another team would want to bring in Russell Westbrook, I wouldn't even say to sell seats, because I think his star is diminished, but because the following year you can use his contract slot to sign a free agent. That's the only benefit you'd get of getting Russell Westbrook for 1 year. And look, if Brooklyn was hell-bent on keeping Kevin Durant, I don't think they were going to go ahead and acquire Russell Westbrook. I mean, I think that would totally piss off Kevin Durant, unless he's kissed and made up with Russell Westbrook full bore, which I doubt. And even if he has, does he really want to play with him? Because Westbrook's a difficult guy to play with. So yeah, the Lakers may just be stuck with Russell Westbrook, and good luck going into his 14th year. If you could try to change the way he plays, he's the least self-aware player in the NBA. He just plays the way he plays. Head down. I'm the point guard. I know how to play. I'll take shots the way I want. I may take time off on defense. You know, good luck trying to change him. And the Lakers are going to have to deal with him for one more year. And it's their own fault. And it's LeBron James's fault, because he wanted him last year. They got him. And, you know, Russell Westbrook did what Russell Westbrook does. I mean, Chris Rock is famous as saying, don't be surprised when the tiger acts like a tiger. You know, and people flip out when a tiger in the zoo or a tiger in a circus acts up and starts destroying things. Well, he's a tiger. That's right. What he does. You know, same thing with Russell Westbrook. That's the way he plays basketball. Good luck trying to change him. It ain't going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. And it seems like as much as we thought that his contract was going to be hard to move, the league perceives it the same way, or if not more so, Sap, that it's just that it's a distressed asset that nobody wants to try to recover. Mm-hmm. So they're going to have a hard time moving that. But the Kevin Durant thing was obviously the big news of the week so far, Seth. But we did have some breaking news right before we got on today, and that is some unfortunate news that second overall pick rookie Chet Holmgren of the Oklahoma City Thunder may have torn some ligaments in his foot. We don't know when this happened. He did play at the crossover Pro-Am in Seattle a few days ago that LeBron played in, Jason Tatum played in, a bunch of NBA players did. And he did limp off the court, though they said that was an ankle, so it could have been there, could have been during a workout, unsure. But foot injuries and big men throughout the history of the NBA have not been a kind pairing. Sap, we all, you know, remember what happened with Bill Walton, had, you know, a ton of problems. Kevin McHale towards the, you know, had some foot problems. Yao Ming, it really hampered his career. Shaq towards the end of his career had a lot of foot problems. Chet Holmgren is a legit, 7'2", 7'3", Sap. It's not like he's carrying a lot of weight, but it just seems like those injuries tend to linger with big guys. And so this is really bad news for the Thunder that he may have torn some ligaments in his foot. Not, I don't even, that could wipe out his rookie season. It could be a few months. I don't know. But my concern, if I'm Oklahoma City, is that it's a lingering type of injury.
Yeah, I mean, Greg Oden, as you mentioned, Bill Walton, you know, this has happened with many of the big guys. Sam Bowie, who was the pick before Michael Jordan in 1984, his was a little bit different. He actually broke his leg, the bone between the knee and the ankle. I mean, it was one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen. But yeah, I mean, when you've got a large person like that who isn't really a big, strong guy. I mean, he's tall, he's lanky, he's very skilled, right? I mean, he's incredibly skilled. He can shoot threes, he can handle the ball. I mean, he almost looked at times like a taller version of Kevin Durant. That's damn scary. He's obviously not quite as skilled as Durant, but he's just not a guy with a lot of strength. So he's going to be battling some guys down low from time to time, and you know, he's going to lose those battles. Let's hope that this isn't career-threatening, or I don't think it's career-threatening at this point, but it is one of those injuries that could linger and lead to other injuries, and who knows what happens here. And he was the number two pick in this draft, and I think some teams were shying away because of that, because of his body type. But yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate that this happened so soon, and we'll see what happens during the season. And Zion Williamson is kind of at the other end. He's 6'6", but he's carried so much weight that he's had problems with the foot and the knee and all of these things, that you hope that he gets in shape. You know, maybe Zion could give 30 pounds to Chet Holmgren and they'd both be better off of that.
Yeah, and you hate to see it. It does seem like we've seen over the past, you know, decade or plus sap, a lot of guys have their rookie years or early in their career have these injuries that, you know, wipe out, you know, a season for them early on. We talked about, you just said Zion, he lost his first season. We lost this past season too because of injuries. I believe, didn't Blake Griffin miss his rookie season?
Yes. Sap
with a knee.
He did.
We know, you mentioned Greg Oden. Not only did he miss his first season, he missed many seasons subsequent and, you know, really was not able to catch on the NBA because the injuries caught up with him. It is unfortunate that this sort of happens a lot. Ben Simmons missed the whole his whole rookie season with an injury too. So it's a weird trend. I don't know, Sap, is it the transition from college to the NBA that, you know, you're working out more, you're getting ready for a longer grind that maybe gets these guys injured? I don't know. I mean, pure speculation. Do you have any sort of any guess, Sap, or is it just dumb, crappy luck?
It could be overtraining. It could be overuse. You know, the players play so much AAU, then they get into college. And, you know, even after college, there's so much that takes place before their rookie season. Again, we're talking about athletes with incredibly uncommon body types, right? I mean, you see that in football with linemen. You know, when you're 6'5", you're not really constructed to carry 350 pounds like offensive and defensive linemen are. So they have their own issues. These extremely large basketball players, you know, when you're 7 feet tall, that's a lot of pounding on the knees and the ankles and the feet. And, you know, it doesn't take much to have the player get these really difficult injuries that they're going to have to deal with really for their entire career. So I think that that's part of it. But it could also be overtraining. I don't know. I'm sure we saw these injuries before, but they weren't diagnosed like they are now. You know, I mean, when Bill Walton went through this, they weren't quite sure what the hell it was. But now there's better medical procedures done, so you can jump on it quickly like they did with Chet Holmgren and then hopefully fix it and make sure that maybe he doesn't play in his rookie season, but then he can have a long career. We're going to see that, obviously, with Zion. But, yeah, you talked about a lot of guys that missed their rookie season. Yeah, Blake Griffin, Ben Simmons, Markelle Fultz, too, right? I mean, he played minimally in his rookie season. I mean, Philadelphia kept drafting guys. And they didn't
strangely enough, all those guys, number one overall pick in the draft.
Number two. Yeah, and Joel Embiid was the third overall pick and really didn't play much until his fourth year.
That's a great point,
which I know our next discussion is going to be about Jason Tatum, who has been really durable in his career. And he talked about how he was dealing with a non-displaced fracture in his left wrist during the final 2 months of the season. And Tatum has played in 365 of a possible 394 games in his career, which is 93%. So maybe he wore down in the postseason, but I'll give Jason Tatum credit in a time where there's a lot of load management and Kawhi Leonard takes like every third year off like he's a professor, you know, taking a sabbatical. Give Jason Tatum credit. He shows up and plays 93% of the time and has played more minutes since the lockdown, you know, since the pandemic, since the bubble. He's played more minutes than anybody in the NBA. So give him credit. But a lot of it, Jed, I think can be luck, just the way you're constructed. Like, look at someone like LeBron James. I mean, he's just built differently than everyone else, and he's been incredibly durable. He's had some injuries the last couple of years. But there's a little bit of luck that rolls into that because, you know, again, wrong place, wrong time. You turn that ankle, and you can have to deal with that for a period of time. Like Gordon Hayward, just use him for an example, right?
Just terrible luck.
Goes up for an alley-oop, comes down, and really has never been the same since, and missed an entire year and has been in and out of the lineup the last 4 years.
That's a concern, right? Except that snowballs on you. You know,
exactly.
You have bad luck, and then you suddenly become the guy who's always hurt.
Yeah, and you favor that particular part of your body, and that may lead to another injury, right? Because before that injury, Gordon Hayward was pretty darn durable. I mean, he was a guy who played essentially, you know, 74, 75, 76 games a year.
Right.
And then that happened, and now we see that he's out all the time. It's almost like he'd been cursed. So those are all things that players have to deal with. But again, when you're talking about guys of that size playing a confined area, you know, these things are going to happen. And part of it could be overtraining as well. But, you know, I think the league has to look into this because the players are the biggest assets they have.
Yeah, you know, and a lot of people now today are saying, oh, why did he play in that Pro-Am, you know, over the weekend in Seattle and stuff like that. These guys love playing basketball. They're not going to take their summers off and never play basketball again. That, you know, that doesn't make sense for them. And also, you want your players to continue to hone their craft and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So if he did injure it at the Pro-Am, yeah, that's really unfortunate. That sucks. But if it wasn't that Pro-Am, it'd be, you know, at the Thunder facility or at, you know, it could have happened anywhere. It's not because he played in the Pro-Am. That's just the unfortunate luck of the draw. So I hope Chet Holmgren heals soon. I'd like to see him on an NBA court because I think he's a fascinating prospect. I don't know if he's going to work out in the NBA because he is so svelte, but he has a very, very unique skill set. We watched him obviously as a top recruit in high school too, and you know, take Gonzaga far in the tournament. So we'll see what goes on with him, but hopefully it's not an extended period of time, and really hopefully it's not a career threatening injury. But you just got to pay attention to the history of foot injuries with big men in the NBA. It's not a good history. Hopefully medical technology has come far enough where they can get rid of that stigma, but it's definitely not what, if I'm a Thunder fan, I'm feeling very nervous today.
Absolutely, yeah, because, I mean, he's a very important future piece of that organization.
Yep, so you mentioned Jason Tatum, Sapp, and now it's the news sort of coming out from Celtics land, other than relief that they were going to trade Jaylen Brown and a whole lot more for Kevin Durant. But it was that Jason Tatum was talking to, I believe it was Taylor Rooks, Bleacher Report, talking about, you know, his postseason and, you know, coming up short in the finals and how that's really, you know, sort of haunted him and how he played in the finals. He was not happy with his performance. But the big reveal was obviously that, like you said, Seth, he was playing with a non-displaced fracture in his wrist that affected him. It looked like he injured it or re-injured it when he's playing the Bucks and Giannis. There's a play where he ran into Giannis. We know Giannis is like running into a tank. So, you know, obviously the bone versus Giannis is winning that battle. And so Tatum's wrist was dinged up. But credit to him, Sapp, for, like you said, kind of gutting it out. And he does seem to be somebody who always plays through injury.
Yeah, like I said, I give him a ton of credit. He's answered the bell 93% of the time in his career, more minutes than any other player in the league since the bubble. So that's a good starting point. You never want to hear from players 2 months after the fact about injuries, but they do happen. And the only thing I had out of this, first of all, players open up to Taylor Rooks for obvious reasons. I mean, she's beautiful, right? They just sit across the table from her and she could ask them any question. I want to see her interview Bill Belichick because that would be the ultimate test, right? Because Belichick never says anything and he's snorting and, you know, doesn't give you anything and snaps at reporters. I think even Belichick would melt in the presence of the beautiful Taylor Rooks. So maybe Bleacher Report should try to pull that one off and see if they could get more out of Belichick than the rest of us have over the years. But yeah, it seems like the NBA players see her and they're just like hypnotized, like ask me any question, I'll answer it. And I'll be as honest as I can be. You know, remember, you know, Jaylen Brown did the same thing a few years ago, talking about winning 5 championships and people were getting on him. I'm like, he's sitting across from Taylor Rooks. You know, we're not thinking straight or thinking correctly when we're across from a beautiful woman like that, right? So, Yeah, the only thing is he was talking about how at the beginning of practice he wouldn't wear a brace, but then during practice when the media wasn't there, he would put the brace on. And then he wasn't wearing it during the game. Like, I'm not clear on that. Like, I know they like to hide injuries. But I think it gets around that guys are dealing with something. And maybe it would have been better if he just wore the thing during games. But how much would that hinder him? Again, I'm no expert. You know, I'm not an orthopedic surgeon. I don't know exactly what the level of the injury was. But, you know, that's the type of thing that obviously is going to cause pain. Now, that's his non-shooting hand. But obviously, that has still an impact on how you play the game, especially driving to the basket. Because how many times do we see in the postseason him missing layups and not dunking the ball? I mean, 6'10", he's long, he's strong. I mean, he dunks easily over people, and especially he just wasn't able to do that. Yeah, he just wasn't able to get to the rim the way he normally did. And you know, he was favoring it, to say the least. And then it seemed like he was shaking the shoulder. Maybe that had something to do with the wrist. But, you know, it's out there now. And, you know, I guess that gives you comfort in saying, well, he was injured or hurt. And there are two differences there, injured and hurt. But he was one of those two in the finals rather than, no, he was healthy. He just had stage fright. That would be a bigger concern if you know, he got to the finals for the first time and then was the moment was too big for him.
Right.
So at least now you can look back and say he was banged up. And then next year, if they get back to the finals and he's healthy, he'll make good in his second finals appearance. But yeah, I mean, I like the fact that Jason Tatum really started in the postseason and even after the postseason, it seemed to open up a little bit and be more transparent. And I kind of like that. I like that.
He's showing more of his personality
too. Yeah, which I like, rather than just kind of
like how young he is, Seth.
Yeah, he's not even 25 yet. So I, you know, I like the fact that he's opening up a little bit more. I mean, is he ever going to be a great leader? Probably not. That's just not in his personality. But I like the fact that he's opening up a little bit and taking responsibility for maybe not playing at the level that we expect. And look, Larry Bird in his first finals performance wasn't great. Cedric Maxwell was the MVP of that. Luckily for Bird and the Celtics, they were playing a 40-42 Houston Rockets team. You know, Jason Tatum shows up to his first finals and he's got to face Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, and the rest of the Golden State Warriors who go on and win their fourth title in 8 years. So, you know, it's obviously a different animal that he was facing than, say, Larry Bird did back in 1981. So, look, LeBron's first finals was not all that great against San Antonio. His second finals was a disaster against Dallas. And then since then, he's gotten it right. The next eight times he's gone there, even though he's 4-4 in those eight finals, it's never been
not
for lack of performance. Yeah, I mean, two of those finals, you could make a case he should have been the MVP on the losing side. So, we'll see what happens with Tatum if the Celtics get back there. But you always look at these missed opportunities because the East is so deep. And we know that these other teams are ready, willing, and able to contend and maybe strike and make a move at the trade deadline. You know, will the Celtics get back to the finals? It's not that easy. I mean, I go back to 2012 when Oklahoma City, with a very young Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden got to the finals. You're like, well, this team's going to show up for the next 5 years, and they never got back there. And Harden and Westbrook have never even gotten back to the finals, and Durant had to go to Golden State to go back to the finals. So, you know, it's not as easy as it looks, but I think the Celtics are in good shape, and I like the way that they addressed their weaknesses in the offseason by trading for Malcolm Brogdon and signing Danilo Gallinari. I think they have a really deep, talented roster, and I think they're the favorites in the Eastern Conference, but they still have to go out there and prove it this year. But back to Jason Tatum, maybe a little bit of load management with him so that, you know, he's stronger in the postseason, and getting off to a good start is important. They had no choice but to play their guys in the second half of the season, because let's not forget, in early January, they were the 11th seed. They didn't have the luxury of sitting guys down, you know, knowing that they were a sure bet to make the postseason. So get off to that good start, build up a good record so that midseason, if you want to give Jason Tatum a night or two off, same thing with Jaylen Brown, that you can afford that because you know that you've pretty much secured a playoff spot.
Yeah, it's a great point, Seth. They were so far behind the eight ball because of how poorly they started the season that you're exactly right. They had no choice but to play their, you know, best players big minutes. They had to get back into contention. You know, obviously, they were able to work their way all the way up to the number two seed and get to the NBA Finals in the losing effort. But still, that was because they had to, you know, really play their players a lot. And so, yeah, maybe it was just an attrition thing with Jason Tatum. But he seems to be healthy now. And if you're a Celtics fan, I think with that interview you heard all the right things, that he was really bothered by how he played, bothered by losing. It keeps him up at night. He's, you know, he has the drive to win. So it's good news from the Celtics front. And you said, Steph, they addressed a lot of their biggest shortcomings in terms of personnel in the offseason without having to give up really much of anything. So they certainly should be considered a favorite. And the East, as you mentioned at the top of the show, is really loaded. We know Milwaukee is going to be hungry again, and Chris Middleton is going to be returning. Brooklyn will be at presumably full strength when they weren't last year. You know, Miami's not going anywhere. Philadelphia should be better considering James Harden has more time with the team and maybe he's a little bit healthier. Tyrese Maxey will continue to grow. And they added PJ Tucker. So, you know, everybody's in the East, it's close and it's going to be a war. So it'll be interesting to see who gets out of there. But the Celtics certainly put themselves in good position behind Jason Tatum. And Sap, that's going to do it for us here at the Pick and Roll NBA podcast with Jet and Sap. Thanks to Full Press Coverage, and check out their website for all sorts of great podcasts and articles. I know Sap just wrote one that he teased last week about Bill Russell, correct, Sap? That's up on Full Press now?
Yes, absolutely. You know, time for the city of Boston to step up and honor Bill Russell, maybe changing Causeway Street to Bill Russell Way, getting a statue in front of TD Garden rather. I mean, you can leave the statue where it is now near City Hall. It's not in City Hall Plaza or in Government Center, but it's next to City Hall near the former Wax Museum and the Staples store. So, you know, maybe leave that there, but build another statue to put in front of TD Garden. But I think the biggest honor for Bill Russell would be if you could rename a public school, a high school after Bill Russell, and then maybe the Celtics players, whatever you need to do to make happen, provide scholarships for high school students in the area to go to college. I think that Bill Russell, as he is up in heaven right now, would greatly appreciate that because he was all about that, more off the court than on the court. And that's saying a lot.
Yeah. So that's a great article. Great ideas. We talked about it last week and it's up on Full Press Coverage right now. So check that out. Check out our social medias for all updates on the show and our different musings and thoughts and stuff like that at JohnSapp25 at Jet Stryer. And you can find the show wherever podcasts are found. You can check out the YouTube version at youtube.com/Jet Stryer. And we will talk to you later, everybody, with more NBA news. And I hope everybody's having a great week. And see you later.